Today on Maine Calling, young people and politics. Gen Z is the largest generation in history, and most of them can now vote. Almost 50 million Americans between ages 18 and 29 are eligible to vote in the 2026 midterms. They are already reshaping both major political parties. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, the impact of these young voters. This is a generation that grew up with school shootings and the rise of social media, the Black Lives Matter and Me Too movements, navigated the COVID pandemic while still in school or trying to launch their careers, and now face skyrocketing housing prices. Many care a great deal about what's happening in Israel and Palestine. They see the world differently than their elders. How does that change politics here in Maine and nationally? Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible by support from Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure with 19 locations across the state, now open in Bangor and Waterville. And Quarry Cottages at Highland Green, committed to providing low-maintenance living and dedicated to creating a community where residents are free to pursue their passions. And Bangor Savings Bank, committed to helping Northern New England communities thrive. You matter more. Bangor.com. And North Yarmouth Academy, a 2025 AP Platinum School recognized by College Board, inviting families to tour campus, shadow a student, and explore its new dormitory.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Today, we're going to explore what political issues and ideas young people care about, what motivates them to vote and get involved in politics, and how the younger generation is influencing the direction of America's political parties. Joining me for this hour is Dan Shea, who is a professor of government at Colby College. He has written or edited more than 20 books on American politics, including Fountain of Youth, Strategies and Tactics for Mobilizing America's Young Voters. Natalie Emerson is a junior at Bowdoin College and co-creator of Pine State Politics In Session podcast. And Cherie Strawn is a professor of political science and director of the Ray C. Bliss Institute of Applied Politics and a professor of political science at the University of Akron. We invite you to join the conversation. Are you between the ages of 18 to 29 and engaged in politics? Or are you that age and feeling disillusioned with politics? Maybe you've talked with your adult kids or grandkids about politics and found that their perspectives are interesting. Whatever your case, send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Welcome to all of you. Cherie, I'll start with you and some numbers. I know it used to be sort of conventional wisdom in politics that young people didn't vote and that campaigns really targeted older people. That's changed a little bit, hasn't it?
It has. There were some nadirs that we hit, some low points that we hit in 1996 for the presidential election, but particularly the midterms in 2014. It depends on whose numbers you look at, but between 15% to 19% was a low point that sort of scared people. So there's been a lot of effort, particularly on college campuses, to help the students register, and mobilize them, which has been effective at bumping up turnout. It's still lower than older Americans, but it's helped boost registration and turnout.
Okay, so in 2014, 15 to 19% of people considered young voted, people under 30. Where are we in more recent elections?
So in more recent elections, so for example, in 2022, for example, that bumped up to 23%, was 28% in 2018, but in the 2020 presidential election, it bumped up to 50%.
50%, wow. Dan, characterize a young voter. How are young voters different, and how are they the same as any other voter?
Well, sticking with the turnout issue, and Cherie's right, of course, there was sort of a panic a couple decades ago which led to the book that I did. I opened a center. There are many centers, organization, Rock the Vote, Vote or Die, all these efforts. They seem to have made a difference. Turnout is in the aggregate is higher. But one of the things that's different, again, sticking with turnout, is that they tend to be inconsistent. For most Americans, older Americans, when you begin to vote, say after 30 or 35, you vote in every election. We're not quite seeing that for younger Americans. They're inconsistent, not just between presidential and midterm, but surely between midterm and municipal, local elections, even from presidential to presidential. Only about less than 20% of people who could have, young people who could have voted in the last three presidential elections, did so in all of those elections.
But why do you think that is?
Well, that's a great question of what motivates young voters to come to the polls. That's the big issue, right? So I always say that the political graveyards of politicians who thought they could get to office by boosting young voter turnout is quite large. There are a lot of them. So what is it that turns out young voters and doesn't turn out young voters? One issue, I mean, Sheree mentioned these efforts, they matter. I got to tell you, I think one of the most important efforts is this deep polarization that we're seeing in the Trump era. I think young voters are coming to the polls more in the Trump era because of this deep polarization. And then, of course, there's this host of issues and policies, which I'm sure we'll get to.
All right. Well, I want to turn to you, Natalie, because I know that you have been interested in politics long before you could even vote. And so you may not be representative of everybody else your age. But what is your sense of that? Do you feel as though you are an outlier, or does everyone you know find themselves interested in politics?
Yeah, that's a great question. Thank you. I think there's an important distinction between interest in politics and voting, people who vote among young people. I'm not surprised by lower voter turnout numbers, but I would argue that pretty much everyone I know my age is deeply engaged in the world and they care about our country and our community. And it's hard to pick one issue, I think, because we've grown up sort of surrounded by all of it. I was thinking of issues before coming on today, and I really couldn't pick one or two that were more strong than any other. And so I think that the big block maybe to being involved through voting or through the institutions themselves is accessibility. I think it's really, really hard to understand how to vote, how your vote matters, the difference between state versus federal versus municipal office, all of these things. So it's less how much we care about the issues and more understanding how our impact can be felt.
And Dan, you wanted to jump in. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's actually what Natalie suggests is backed up by the research. So when everybody was worried about young voter turnout, a lot of studies were done, and what they found is that young people are not apathetic. They are not disengaged. They are not turned off, but rather they're more interested in direct connections to the community, right? Which we called service politics. In other words, why should I go through all that business of voting and the ugliness of politics when I can go to the literacy program and make a difference? So right about the same time we saw a decline in voting, we saw this massive increase in service politics. So which speaks to this frustration with traditional modes of behavior. So I think Natalie was spot on with that.
Go ahead, Sheree.
Yeah, I would just say the other thing is the motivation to vote. They did service in part because that was the first approach to students pulling away from public life. We implemented service learning. It's ubiquitous, right? It's everywhere on every college campus because we thought once they're connected to the community, like how can you be involved at the local school and not vote for school board? Right? We thought that they would start and step back up. But this was a reaction to people across the board pulling away from public life. And it affected young people the most because they were socialized at a time where the most robust form of political socialization was eroded. So, and what I'm talking about is not taking my class, not going to a college campus. I'm talking about voluntary associations, everything from church to labor unions to Kiwanis to, you know, the Elks and the VFW. Those places are where people cultivated this strong sense of intrinsic obligation to participate in public life. And there was this strong realization that like these collective endeavors, including voting, including supporting democracy, require all of us to be inconvenienced and to give a little bit, right? To pay our dues, to read the paper, and to do a little bit. Incredibly robust political socialization for Americans across our history. And then those erode by the 1960s and 70s are starting to go away. And so, yeah, that's why you see when there's successful efforts externally, whether it's an issue or a really successful campaign or a voter registration drive, we can get young people to vote, right? But the intrinsic identity is of this matters that I do this not only for myself, but for the broader community has eroded. It's not their fault. They didn't get rid of that robust political socialization, right? And those voluntary clubs and groups and associations that they grew up without them, right? It's not their fault, it's ours.
I want to talk a little bit about how young people are changing the political parties, if they are. And one of the reasons we're doing this program this week, as opposed to another week of the year, is that Charlie Kirk's organization, Turning Point USA, is coming to Maine this week, this Friday. And Natalie, I'm wondering, from both the conservative students you know and the liberal students you know, do they feel discontent with their own parties, and how do they want to change them?
Yeah, Jen, that's a great question. The answer is yes, first and foremost. I think there's a huge amount of disillusionment with political parties in general. I would say particularly from progressive and left-leaning students that I am aware of. I'm also just Bowdoin, through no hidden secret, is a pretty liberal place. So I have a much greater exposure to students that would vote Democratic than students who vote Republican or are engaged with the Republican Party. But I think there's this feeling of not being represented by the people in elected office, whether that be by age, by racial demographic, by economic differences. And it makes it really hard to become excited or understand the purpose of engaging with the party system if the youth voice is sort of, I would argue, systematically not listened to. I think, again, there's been this huge uptick in reaching out to youth voices and messaging to the young people and trying to emphasize in campaign language the issues that historically poll well with youth voters. But if you actually look at how that translates into the positions that young people get in campaigns or the positions that they hold in political offices, like as staffers, and the policies that get worked on, I would argue there's a massive disconnect between messaging that goes towards young people and actual attention and respect paid to youth ideas. And so young people can see that, right? And in seeing that, I think makes them a lot less likely to engage despite the messaging attempts.
Can you give us some examples of issues where you feel as though young people really, really care and maybe politicians are giving them lip service, but then not following through?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is gun violence. Second thing that comes to mind is climate policy. Like, I remember the switch when I was in middle school, we made a switch from lockdown drills, which were the ones that I grew up with in elementary school, to active shooter drills. And so gun violence has sort of been this presence that's been in the background the entirety of my time, my political awareness at least. And we see these school shootings happening every week, every month, like very, very regularly. I think something like there were more mass shootings than there were days in the year in the United States last year. And yet very little gun legislation is passed. The only thing that happens is more robust drills in schools. There may be red flag laws passed or yellow flag laws passed or waiting periods enacted, but those all feel very political, and sure, they close some loopholes that may exist. But when you get to the actual root of the problem, which is that people are coming into schools with automatic rifles and shooting children, that hasn't changed at all.
Yeah. Dan, I want to ask you, is what Emily senses, is that backed up by research? Do indeed politicians want to reach the youth vote, but not really want to follow through on what they want?
Well, politicians are very pragmatic. They respond to groups who vote. So for a while, they weren't paying attention. As part of that book I did, we asked a survey question of party leaders across the country, local party leaders. What's the number one group in your community for the long-term success of your party? And young voters didn't even show up on the list. They're much more likely to say older voters and labor unions or conservative groups, whatever, even though we asked about the long-term health of their party. Now things have changed because young voters are starting to vote. But you know, I did agree with Natalie on one thing. I'm gonna push back on another one. It depends how you ask the question. If you ask someone if they care about gun violence or about climate change, they're going to say yes. Most people will say yes. But a lot of studies are done where you simply ask, what's the most important issue facing you or your community, most important issue you're concerned about? And climate change, for example, doesn't even show up. It's about 5% or 8%. I don't know the gun violence number. You know, a lot of people thought, for example, that young Americans were deeply concerned about what was happening in Gaza. Doesn't even show up. What shows up are issues related to affordability, jobs, and the economy, right? Most young people are not at places like Colby and Bates, right? Most young people are trying to get a job, trying to buy a house, trying to get by. So I think that the Democrats have discovered this now. To be honest and fair, we need to be honest and fair. I think that's why Donald Trump made inroads with young voters last election, particularly young men. So I know that's tough to hear, but I don't think the Democrats are responding or have been responding to that issue about jobs and affordability.
Sheree, would you agree?
I would echo that, and I am not at a place like Colby or Bates. I'm at the University of Akron, where over 50% of our undergraduate students are first-generation college students. We have a huge new immigrant community from resettling refugees, and we have, you know, the children of it's like comparable to Detroit, you know, former rubber workers kids, right, are coming to college for the first time. We had the protest on campus over Gaza was, you know, about 15 students that had placards and signs and walked through campus and then left to go to their jobs. Like, no sit-ins, right, no whatever. And it's not that they don't care about those issues, but it's not what they're prioritizing. They're prioritizing dragging their family up that next rung on the socioeconomic status ladder. So I would say that my students across the board, and I also see, we have a pretty mixed campus because the suburbs around Akron, where we draw students from, are more conservative. And I see a lot less polarization because my students are both conservatives and liberals are pragmatic.
Oh, shoot, Sheree, you're cutting out a little bit, but Natalie, I'll turn to you.
Yeah,
I mean, I think I do agree with both Dan and Sheree. I think that in terms of the issues we may talk about as hot button issues versus the issues that impact people on a day-to-day basis, affordability, cost of living, healthcare, much, much more important, particularly for people aged 18 to 29. That said, I think that a lot of youth voters, maybe you start to become involved in politics in high school, and when you're in high school, the majority, and obviously this is not the case for everyone, but the majority of people are living with their parents, so they're not as worried about cost of living, or they're not the ones responsible for providing it. They're on parents' health insurance, or they don't have health insurance, but regardless, still not responsible for providing it. And so the things that sort of percolate in the conversation are issues like gun violence, are issues like climate, which again, may not represent the lived experience of people 18 to 29 who are buying homes for the first time and trying to buy groceries and getting gas and all of those things. And therefore, I think more important in terms of people voting. But when we talk about youth vote and why young people get involved, which I would argue often happens before 18, those issues, not necessarily the day-to-day issues, but are, I think, more important to youth voters than some of those day-to-day issues. And I think that there's a disconnect there.
Well, we are talking about the youth vote this year as we approach the primary in 2026. 50 million people age 18 to 29 in America are eligible to vote. We are going to take a quick break, but we'd love to hear from you. Do you fall into this age group? How are you thinking about this primary election? Are you even going to vote in it? Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we are talking about the generation of young voters who have potential to make a huge impact on elections and political parties now and in the future. Those are people between the ages of 18 to 29, most of what we refer to as Gen X. My guest today, Natalie Emerson, who is a junior at Bowdoin College and co-creator of Pine State Politics in Session podcast. Cherie Strawn is a political science professor at the University of Akron and director of the Bliss Institute of Applied Politics and Colby College professor of government. Dan Shea is with us. He's co-editor of the book Fountain of Youth, Strategies and Tactics for Mobilizing America's Young Voters. And of course, he teaches at Colby. Let us know your comments and questions. Do you know any young people who care about politics? Do you believe they are shaping the future of our political parties? Send us a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org. You can also post on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. I'd like to talk briefly, if we can, about young politicians. Dan, AOC gets a lot of attention. Does she and can you name others represent the future of the parties they represent, or are they somebody at the edge of the conversation?
No, they're in the center of the conversation. We're seeing a generational shift in politics right now. I think it's happening in both parties. I don't know, maybe what we call maybe the Biden effect, where, you know, the Democratic Party hung on someone beyond the point where they should, and that caught a lot of people off guard. So I think there's this understanding that it's time and places for a younger generation. AOC is a very important part of the Democratic Party, and there are a number of young conservatives that are part of the Republican Party. I do think there's a generational shift happening, yes.
And Cherie, let me ask you, because the Turning Point USA tour is coming to Maine, to Portland Friday night, how important is that, and how much does that represent what's going on with young conservatives?
Yeah, well, across the board, the young conservatives may be attracted to Turning Point's show, but across the board, I have some research that shows that the polarization, the rudeness, the escalating violence alienates a lot of people from public service. A lot of young people, there's been research, have just said, this is not for me, and I'm not willing to make those kinds of sacrifices. Students in particular that you think, like Ivy League and elite institutions that you think would be, you know, set up for a, a career in the Senate, are saying I'll influence public policy and issues through philanthropy and through donations and contributions rather than running for office. So the nastiness and the rudeness and the aggressive polarization discourages most young people unless they're really interested in wielding power, then they're willing to imitate it. But it alienates a lot of young people from being willing to serve.
Yeah, and I need to ask you, Natalie, because he is a Bowdoin grad, about the new mayor of New York City. Does he represent the future of the Democratic Party in your view?
Yeah, that's it. I was thinking about Mayor Mamdani as we were listening. I think so, yes. And I think just a quick response to what Shriyu was saying, I agree that the polarization is driving a lot of young people away, and also just people in general. I don't think that's specific to young people. But I think that what Turning Point has that is similar to what AOC has, to what Mamdani has, to what I would argue James Tallarico has, is that they represent change. And I think that there's an extent to which youth voters, I know I myself and can speak for myself and my friends, are just so tired. And maybe this ties into the Biden effect that you were talking about, of seeing what has been going on for so long, that any voice that emphasizes change immediately becomes more interesting and more attractive. And even if you don't like the change or agree with the way that they are advocating for change, you're willing to join that conversation because you know that there's an emphasis on change there. And I think that one of the really cool things, and then to answer your question about Mamdani specifically, he doesn't just represent change, but I think he does it, you know, there's a joke about the difference between a politician and a statesman. And I don't remember the joke, but when Zoran Mamdani comes to mind, I think of a statesman, in that he conducts himself responsibly. He's well-spoken, he's polite, he's all of these things. The change that he represents is less his rhetoric, and it's more the fact that he has followed through with things, right? Like, we saw the childcare enacted within the first 100 days in office. We're seeing the tax against the 1% of New Yorkers. We're seeing all of these programs, and he's rolling them out. He said he could do it, he got elected, and now he's doing it. And it's less the things he's talking about and more his ability to follow through that represents the change.
You could argue the same thing about Donald Trump, though.
You know, there's a reason he won the popular vote.
On the line with us now is Mac Thompson, who is University of Maine class 2025 grad, who majored in political science and women's gender and sexuality studies. Mac, thanks for calling in.
Hi, thank you.
So I'm wondering about your view as a brand new grad, and congratulations, about politics in America. How did you get interested in politics? Are there certain issues that matter most to you? And do you think that you're usual among your peers?
I would say I've been in politics pretty early on compared to other people. I started out when I was like 15 or 16, helping out with canvassing for Bernie Sanders, and like started my journey that way. And I would say I would hope to think that I am thinking the same thing that my peers are thinking, but I am seeing a big uprising in youth putting a lot of effort into getting involved in politics.
When you say getting involved, do you believe that people are running for office? Do you believe that they're getting involved in political parties, or just committing to going to the polling place and voting?
Yeah, I think it starts off with knowing that your vote matters and going to the polls and voting. But I think we're starting to see a lot more young people running for office. And I think that starts out with getting involved in their school boards.
Do you, well, I'll just ask you this way. How do you see your generation changing the political parties, both Republican and Democratic?
Right now I am working on a youth initiative with Wabanaki, both Wabanaki youth and non-Wabanaki youth, focusing in specifically Wabanaki issues. And I've seen just a lot of like focus in climate, like you were talking about. And I think I see a lot of hope that we're making that change, and we have a lot of people behind us saying that we're the future, and it's our job to kind of step up and do that.
Well, Mac, thanks so much for calling in. Mac Thompson, a recent UMaine graduate. Now another UMaine connection. We have Keegan Tripp, who is class of 2026, outgoing student body president for UMaine Student Government. Keegan's graduating this weekend, major in political science with minors in sociology, legal studies, and leadership studies. Keegan, thanks for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And congratulations. What a big week. Tell us about your passion in politics. How did it come about?
Yeah, mine kind of starts where I think a lot of people started, which was the pandemic. It was hard to look away from kind of what was going on. And I remember prior to that, my family isn't a major kind of political group. And I think that it wasn't something super talked about until I kind of started paying attention and realizing it does matter directly with everything that's going on. So from there, I think it started. I took some early political science classes in high school, loved it, and then decided to go to UMaine for political science. And ever since then, has been really involved in the field.
So you ran for student body president and won. Are you going to run for office in the real world?
Not too sure just yet. I think that that's a question I get often. I really enjoyed doing the kind of grassroots-esque kind of level of work on the campus level. It was a lot of fun bringing communities together and kind of talking through issues that they'd like to see. It's definitely something I would consider in the future, but I think for now I'm going to try to get into policy and really hone my skills there. And then, you know, if the opportunity arises.
Now, you heard Mac before you mention climate and the environment is an important issue. Do you agree that that is one of the driving issues for your generation, or do you think it's the price of gas and the price of housing or something else entirely?
Well, I think I think all of the above, as unspecific that answer is. What I think Mac really touched on and I believe in is that more than the parties themselves, younger folks are getting really involved in the issues. I think that what really motivates them are issue-specific organizing and campaigns and people who are speaking to, like you said, gas prices and those more immediate issues. But also, I do think that this generation is super aware of the long-term, you know, climate action and stuff that needs to happen. So it's a little bit of both. But what I really do see is those issue-specific perspectives standing out and motivating people more.
All right. Well, Keegan, congratulations again, and thank you for calling in. Keegan Tripp, about to graduate from the University of Maine, outgoing student body president. Sheree, I want to come back to something you were saying before, is that one of the big changes in America is the fact that people don't belong to the same kind of organizations they did a couple generations ago. Not as many people involved in their church, not as many people involved in VFW and Rotary, just, you know, line up all the kinds of organizations that people did used to be involved in. Of course, at the same time, there's been the rise in social media. And I'm wondering how that has changed how young people are involved in politics. I suspect it means that they're being exposed to political issues far more often than they were before. But does it make it seem sort of more abstract at the same time?
I think that it makes it feel that action on the internet is taking action, like, you know, that tweeting, I guess we don't call it tweeting anymore, Blue Sky X, social media, Twitter, TikTok. I think that there's a parasocial relationship where people don't realize that oftentimes that doesn't result. It's an expression of voice, and it might persuade people to change their mind. But unless you organize, you know, Americans were known for the art of organizing, which in the United States means a federated structure to move issues across our mass federal, right, infrastructure. And so if there's not a good place to learn those skills, it just becomes harder. It's not rocket science, right? You can organize that way and you can invent those structures. Black Lives Matter did it really quickly from going to digital, right, to a federated structure, but it's just an extra layer of work that they have to do. And I also think we're asking more of students. It used to be that you could read the Prestige Press and watch Walter Cronkite and know what was happening. And now they've got to call through all this crap. So that's online and like figure out what's real. And so we're asking more of young people, right, to be involved and to achieve influence than we asked from previous generations.
Natalie.
Yeah, I think off the back of what Sheree just said and also what our student caller said, it's a combination of school board, pandemic, and social media, actually. But thinking about like when I got involved and when my peers got involved, there are like three defining moments for me that stand out. There was the 2016 election, which happened when I was 11. So I was in sixth grade. Then there was the pandemic, which happened when I was 14. And then in college, the biggest thing has been the Middle East. And so the presidential election was just sort of this like a waking up of, oh, politics matter. It's going on. And then as I think it was Keegan was mentioning, during the pandemic, you really couldn't turn away from it. It was like every day you opened up the news and there was something new, or every day you opened up social media and there was something new. And because you were at home and you weren't socializing and you didn't have as many community outlets, you really had to engage with it, or there was a much larger opportunity to engage with it. And I remember I got my start as a student representative on a school board. It was sort of my first interaction with direct democracy. And one of the conversations happening was about book banning. And a lot of the book bans being instituted or talked about involved race and books that talked about critical race theory and racism in the United States. And I remember hearing all of these people talk about all of these adults, these parents, these teachers, politicians, whomever they may have been. Oh, by teaching this in the classroom, they're going to teach kids how to hate America. Oh, they're teaching about, they're indoctrinating the youth and all of these things. And I remember thinking, it's not a book that made me think racism in the United States is a problem. It's watching a police officer kneel on the neck of George Floyd until he died. Like, and that was accessible versus social media. Banning a book is not going to change my view of racism in the United States. I see it every day.
Yeah. That's the perspective of Natalie Emerson, one of our guests today. She's a Bowdoin College student and co-creator of the Pine State Politics podcast. What are your thoughts about the younger generation and politics? Are you a member of that younger generation? What are you thinking about? Also, if you're a grandparent or a parent with interesting conversations with young people in your life, give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. If you're quick, you can send a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today, we're talking about young people in politics and the impact they can have on elections and will have on the two major political parties. Joining me for the hour, Sheree Strawn, who is director of the University of Akron's Bliss Institute of Applied Politics, Dan Shea, professor of government at Colby College, and Natalie Emerson, Bowdoin College student and co-creator of the Pine State Politics podcast. Share your comments and questions. Send us a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org. You can also, if you're quick, post on Facebook or Instagram or give us a call. Our number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Dan, I wanted to turn back and ask you about some of what the young people, all of us really, but young people especially, are being exposed to through social media and online. A lot of it is pretty darn nasty and pretty darn negative. Is it hard to get excited when everything is about how rotten the other guy is?
Well, yeah, there is that part of it. So there are two pieces. One is studies do show that, well, the question on negative stuff, does it turn people off? Does it turn people away? And there was a very big book on this several years ago called Going Negative. And what they found is for people who are deeply partisan, it actually turns them on, turns them out, but it does turn off young voters. So there is evidence to suggest that negative stuff has a deleterious effect on young voters. With regard to the social media, I don't know, the jury's out, right? Remember Malcolm Gladwell a few years ago called it slacktivism, right? There's no real evidence yet that online activism leads to real world engagement. Is it a placebo, which is what Cherie was getting at? That's a good question, right? It matters when you go to the meeting, when you vote, when you write letters to the editor, when you organize. Is it enough? Is it enough to just be online? I don't know. That's an open question.
We'll go to Harry, who's calling from North Yarmouth. Hi, Harry, go ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Yes, I am not a young person. I'm 72 years old. And I have been very engaged in politics, getting involved really because of the Vietnam War back in the 70s. But I just want to say it's been so refreshing. I'm very involved with the Plattner campaign. And all of the staffers that I've met that are paid by the campaign, they're all young, they're all energized, they're really smart. And I can tell that all of them have a background in organizing, and I believe that's why Plattner has picked up for these kids, hired these kids. And it's just really refreshing to see and how engaged they are. So I just have a great feeling for the future and also for the Plattner campaign.
Thank you, Harry. Natalie, does your generation know how to organize?
I mean, I think so. It's how I got my start. It's my biggest mentors in politics or organizers. And I think organizing is the way to get things done.
Cherie, is it possible that Gen Z has something that the millennials missed?
I mean, I think that there are, we have a master's of applied politics, and we recruit students that want to learn how to organize or have, you know, are stepping up and enhancing those skills. So of course there's a layer of young people that are engaging and embracing that work, but across the board in terms of just belonging to those organizations and having ready access to those civic skills, no, it's atrophied. I mean, especially post-pandemic, even getting students to join student organizations and be engaged on campus in student government or the student organizations on campus, you can look at the statistics nationwide, they're declining. And that's the best political socialization that we have on campus. So yes, there's a layer of interested and active students, and thank goodness, because they feed my program. But across the board, because of the decline of participation in associational life from 4-H to, junior Kiwanis to all the clubs and organizations that kids used to belong to as children, all the way up through college, that those experiences are eroded, and it's damaging to the ability to organize.
Harry, thanks for your question. And Natalie, to that, I mean, are people basically living more of their lives online than in person with other people and these organizations?
Yeah, that's a tough question.
I'm not blaming your generation. I'm just asking.
Yeah, no, thank you. I appreciate it. I would say there is a phenomenal amount of life that does happen online, but that doesn't mean that there isn't community in that or that organizing can't happen virtually. I'm trying to put the thought together, but what I've noticed a significant uptick in organizing since in the last 3 years in particular, I would say, and particularly since the 2024 election. I think it also varies based on where you are, both the economic position you're in and the school that you attend. So I think for kids at Bowdoin, there's a little bit more freedom to be involved in organizing. Whereas I know a lot of people that I went to high school with or other people my age who may not have the community structure or economic support to do that. The focus is really on surviving day to day. And I think that is completely legitimate. And there's no time or energy to focus on this on the community organizing or the political stuff. And even though it has a massive impact, I think that one of the reasons that we don't have these community groups or this involvement is because everyone is so focused on just trying to make it through the world, just trying to get food on the table or buy a house or all of these things, to the extent that they're picking up second, third jobs, there isn't time. And so where students and where young people have the time and energy, like at places like Bowdoin or Colby or Bates or UMaine, there's massive engagement. People just need to have the ability to do that.
The bandwidth, yeah. We have an email here from Todd. In talking with young people, it seems like Trump's charisma and sarcasm, along with his numerous great promises, drew them to his campaign. He was funny. Now he's not funny anymore, and they feel lost and confused, like, what happened? Dan, do you think Todd has an apt observation?
Absolutely. A couple observations. I know some of your listeners might not like this, but the parallels between Donald Trump and Graham Plattner, there are quite a few. I mean, they're obviously coming from different sides of the ideological spectrum, but he's an entertainer. He's very powerful. He's a dynamic speaker. He's truly engaging, like Donald Trump was for a lot of people. A bit controversial, also, like Donald Trump was, you know, some of the stuff. And no political experience, like Donald Trump was. So I think that's fair to say. Now, what I do think happened with Trump voters is they're disappointed, right? They're not getting the change that they promised. And that's the tough part about politics. And we see that over and over. I mean, it's particularly in hyper-partisan politics that we're in right now, not a lot gets done. So why jump in? Why be engaged? Why do it one more time? Why, you know, bust a gut to do politics? For many of us, that's just the way it goes. You got to hang in there. But for young people, they might say enough is enough. Conservative young people disappointed in Donald Trump? Yeah, they might not. And I got to tell you, in this coming midterm election, I think that disappointment with Donald Trump is going to lead to decreased turnout among all conservatives.
Yeah.
Republicans.
We just saw that in Ohio in the primaries. Right. Where the turnout, I mean, Vivek Ramaswamy easily won the nomination, but the turnout in terms of number of voters that showed up was substantially fewer than who showed up and voted in the Democratic primary. I think people are frustrated on the right and are sitting it out.
An email here from Chase. I have two kids in their mid-20s currently in college. They tell me they have become disillusioned with capitalism, given the state of our affordability in this nation and the widening gap between upper class and middle class people, difficulty with buying a house for the first time, etc. Politically, they embrace a socialistic society and would like to see the United States move more towards a communistic society. I don't know if this point of view is a growing trend with our young generation or not. Would love feedback from your guests. And I'm just wondering, it's, you know, the word socialism used to be a word that no politician would use. Bernie Sanders may be the only one in the last 10 or 20 years. We have just a couple minutes left, but Natalie, is socialism an okay thing to be for these days in your generation?
I think absolutely. I think a lot of people wear it as a badge of pride. If you look at Zoran Mamdani, he's a democratic socialist. AOC got her rise as a democratic socialist. Bernie, I think you could argue, is a democratic socialist. And I think that democratic socialism has come to mean maybe what people used to identify populism with in the 1890s and early 1900s. And it's this idea of American populism, not the Trump or Orban populism that's currently talked about, but this idea of us versus them, a common versus an elite, and a politics of the people. And I think that capitalism is a word that my use of capitalism in high school versus my use of capitalism in college has grown exponentially. And now pretty much everybody I talk to about politics that is my age capitalism comes into the conversation, whether that be a positive or a negative, it has become maybe the core of every single issue we talk about. Like, you can talk to someone about what's happening in Iran right now, and there are a million different opinions on it. And then one opinion that I hear is, well, it's because of the military-industrial complex and capitalism as a reason to do that, or oil and capitalism as a reason to do that. And every single issue is tied back to capitalism in conversation.
I think we've finished the program, ended the program by putting our nail on the head of one of the biggest differences with the Gen Z voting bloc. Thank you all so much for joining us today. Natalie Emerson, a student at Bowdoin College and co-creator of the Pine State Politics In Session podcast. Also with us, Dan Shea, professor of government at Colby College, and Cherie Strawn, a political science professor with the University of Akron. She also directs their Institute of Applied Politics. Today's sound engineer was Chris Bridges. Main Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, all about gulls, what many people call seagulls. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You have been listening to Main Calling on Maine Public Radio.